Welcome to this new detailed edition of the BayPay Forum Blockchain News. My name is Cindy and today is July 21, 2020. This edition is brought to you by PayCademy, the first business academy to learn payments and fintech. If you have some news in payments and fintech, send it to us at press@baypayforum.com and we will do our best to include your news. In this edition, we will talk about Wirecard exec reportedly used Bitcoin to move funds to Russia. Experts concerned over Twitter's ability to tweet on behalf of users. Figures Mike Cagney, how to build a business in blockchain. China's blockchain infrastructure to extend global reach with 6 public chains. Now let's get started. Wirecard exec reportedly used Bitcoin to move funds to Russia. Russian media reported that Marsalek is hiding in Russia with funds that he was able to transfer there with Bitcoin. Wirecard Chief Operating Officer January Marsalek reportedly used Bitcoin, BTC, to move funds from Dubai to Russia. Russian media outlet Kommersant reported on July 20 that Marsalek is hiding in Russia with funds that he was able to transfer there with the cryptocurrency. Per the report, Marsalek is currently in a private house near Moscow under the supervision of Russian special services. Documents leaked earlier this month also suggest that Marsalek indeed had links with Russian government operators. According to a recent report, he allegedly held secret documents and bragged of his intelligence service ties in an effort to further integrate with London traders. Over $2 billion missing from Wirecard. The scandal involving Marsalek started in late June, when auditors from Big Four accounting company EY could not confirm the existence of over $2.1 billion in cash in Wirecard's books. Marsalek had seemingly gone missing after a purported trip to the Philippines last month to chase down the missing funds. However, some suggested that Russia's Federal Security Service may have helped him forge documents showing that he entered the Philippines. News of the missing funds have since led Wirecard to file for insolvency and spurred the arrest of the firm's CEO, Marcus Braun, in Germany. As Cointelegraph previously reported, Wirecard managed many major crypto-powered debit cards and its demise was seen as a potential blow to the crypto community. Affected crypto cards include the ones issued by companies like Crypto.com and 10x. Still, shortly after the initial suspension, European crypto cards managed by Wirecard were reactivated following permission from the United Kingdom's Financial Conduct Authority. Experts concerned over Twitter's ability to tweet on behalf of users. A worse scenario than the recent attack against Twitter could happen if the social media network doesn't strengthen its internal security procedures, say experts. Cybersecurity experts are warning that the Twitter hack on July 15 shows that the social network needs to strengthen its security in order to avoid a worse black swan scenario with serious consequences. In the most recent incident, attackers launched a crypto giveaway scam by posting phishing messages through the hijacked profiles of celebrities and high-ranked political personalities worldwide, collecting over 13 Bitcoin BTC from the victims. The attack could have been worse. Ilya Sachkov, CEO of threat intelligence firm Group IB, believes the attack demonstrated a huge problem of low financial literacy and bad cyber hygiene. He told Cointelegraph, "This could have ended far worse, affecting the stock market heavily or even resulting in a geopolitical catastrophe. This is the least they could have done with the God mode access they had." James Carter, Chief Security Officer and Vice President of LogRhythm Labs, said that amid international efforts to contain the coronavirus outbreak, hackers are quickly taking advantage and exploiting the uncertainty of this time for their financial gain. Carter said that experts need to evaluate how the attack was possible and pointed out the need to strengthen social media platforms in terms of privacy. This hack also brings into concern why in the first place Twitter granted its employees with the functionality to tweet on behalf of their customers. It is clear that social media organizations need the ability to manage accounts, and particularly the ability to take down offensive or inappropriate content. The employees should not have access to post an entirely unique tweet on a user's behalf. This points to a likely case of too much functionality available in the platform and not enough robust controls. Risk of another incident is still high. Brett Callow, threat analyst at malware lab MSSoft, said that the subsequent security efforts taken by Twitter likely aren't enough to preclude the possibility of another such incident in the future. While Twitter will no doubt work to improve its security, the fact is that there is no completely surefire way to prevent account takeovers, and similar incidents will almost certainly happen again, though hopefully not on this scale, he said. As Cointelegraph previously reported, the hackers who conducted the massive Twitter hijacking do not appear to be sophisticated Bitcoin users, as they left trails leading to and from major exchanges that presumably hold the keys to their identities. Figures Mike Cagney, How to Build a Business in Blockchain. Lex Sokolin, a CoinDesk columnist, is global fintech co-head at Consensus, a Brooklyn, NY-based blockchain software company. The following is adapted from his Future of Finance newsletter. Mike Cagney is the co-founder and CEO of Figure, a full-stack financial services blockchain company with consumer offerings in market or on the way in lending, banking, and more. In late 2019, Figure raised $103 million at a $1.2 billion valuation and continues to grow. Its Provenance blockchain promises radical efficiencies in the $400 billion annual loan origination and trading process. Prior to starting Figure, Mike co-founded and ran Sophy, which raised over $2.5 billion and has become one of the most successful consumer fintech companies of the decade. If you want to understand how someone creates billions of dollars of value in fintech, there is nobody better to ask. I sat down with Mike and Will Beeson of Rebank, an advisory firm, to discuss Figure's roots to asset origination and capital markets disruption, Figure's previously unannounced consumer banking and payments offering, lessons learned building and scaling multiple billion-dollar companies, and more. Here are my top takeaways from the talk. Edited for clarity, longer version here. 1. To build a blockchain business, build a business. For Figure, this meant focusing on the HELOC, home equity line of credit, asset class and creating the software and markets infrastructure around it. The pushback we got 2 years ago was this was too much too soon, the market wasn't ready for blockchain. Like, we could do proof of concepts, we can take baby steps. We didn't want to do that. Cagney said. So, we ended up creating our lending business first and foremost as a way to create a forcing function for the blockchain. We decided that we were going to originate Helix, which was an interesting asset class in its own right and a greenfield opportunity, given where the market was. We ended up creating our lending business first and foremost as a way to create a forcing function for the blockchain. The lending business had to be self-sufficient. It couldn't be a loss leader to drive blockchain adoption. But we used that as a forcing function to get the buy side to engage and say, hey, yes, we'll buy these assets. Well, you've got to buy them on blockchain and then explain what that was. And then we went to the sell side and said, your clients are buying these assets, they need financing, but you've got to do it on blockchain and explain what that was. That's effectively how we launched the Provenance blockchain. It wasn't that we started the company and said, boy, we'd really like to be in the HELOC space. It was actually an artifact of being a first mover, because the market wasn't going to move first on this. 2. Blockchain provides tangible cost savings for institutional finance above and beyond digitization. Mike suggests a 90 basis points of savings between originations, financing, and securitization. In a world of negative interest rates, that is a lot of savings. If you look at Figure, what it costs us to originate a HELOC, it's in the hundreds of dollars, whereas for a traditional bank it's in the thousands of dollars. That has nothing to do with blockchain. That just has to do with how we deal with digital notary, how we deal with digital title search, how we do automated income verification versus having a staff of people that historically have done that work, Cagney said. There's a digitization process that introduces a pretty significant savings and drives a very high contribution margin for the product. And then the ability to securitize that asset where I no longer need the indenture trustee or the paying agent or the custody bank I've historically needed, because of lack of trust, or lack of truth, I should say there's economic benefit to that. And so what we ended up demonstrating was actually 120 basis points of value from point of onboarding through point of sale. So, 33% higher than the original 90 that we thought. That's all blockchain. In addition, we generate significant savings at the origination side just by re-architecting the loan origination system. 3. Sophie has a cash account offering, which was onerous to build. Figure is targeting the payments business, and sees a partnership with retailers as the right strategy to deploy for growth. Several billions of dollars are paid in interchange fees each year, and the first company to disrupt the card network successfully will see a massive outcome, Cagney believes. When we built Sophie Money, we had a bank that was effectively an omnibus bank, so it integrated into the Fed settlement system, it provided a bank identification number, it held the cash. We faced the customers directly, did all the KYC, AML, etc. And the bank didn't know the customer. With Figure, we have these omnibus banks that do the same thing. So why couldn't we get them to give us a BIN? And then let's build a blockchain ledger for individuals and build the same off-ramps into ATM and checks and wires. But the key is that if any two entities within that platform transacted, they could go through a blockchain rail, which is just a ledger of stablecoin from my account to your account versus an interchange rail. And the premise is this works business to business, consumer to consumer, consumer to business. So from a business standpoint, you have this incentive that hey, I am not paying interchange fees. It's a real-time transaction. There's no chargebacks. For a company like Walmart, every dollar is just a straight bottom line to the profit that they don't pay on interchange. But also we can do direct to consumers as well. It's a really cool structure because it runs very economically and allows us to deliver a sustainable solution in underbanked and unbanked consumers. One of the things we're talking to merchants about is using the geolocation and Bluetooth aspect of this to allow them to pay their employees the same day. So it hits your time clock when you walk into the store, it pays you when you leave. 4. Figure's Provenance blockchain token hash is traded privately through a Telegram group, and has a market cap of about $2 billion. This is not listed on any exchanges, which means the company is not exposed to as much speculation, and could see meaningful upside. There is a native crypto asset, Mike told us. Hash, our token right now is not portable. And so it lives exclusively within the Provenance blockchain. We've had requests to tether hash to an exchange to allow people to trade it. So it does trade. It trades in a private Telegram group. And there's a daily auction of hash that happens within Provenance. So there's a regular transacted and liquid price for it. But the intent is that it should be portable. But once that portability is put in place, it introduces a massive incremental set of regulatory issues that we have to navigate. Some people like Ripple's Chris Larson believe there'll be hundreds of blockchains and everything's around interoperability. And Blythe Masters has that view as well. Blitz, one of our advisors and helped us a lot on the architecture of what we were doing to make it scalable and secure for the financial ecosystem. I had the opposite view, which is you have one blockchain. Why do you need any other ones? Because you can basically use smart contracts to build whatever it is you need on that blockchain. And there's massive economies of scale with a single ledger and a single registry. 5. Cross-selling is required in fintech and in traditional financial services to build a business. A monoline company will not succeed against powerful incumbents. Mike also shares his philosophy on building new companies, which revolves around targeting big markets and avoiding direct competition. Reflecting on Sophie and the bundling in fintech today, Mike suggests. My general view is it is extremely difficult to exist and be successful in a financial services business as a monoline provider. So whether you're doing unsecured consumer, auto, whatever the case might be, you can build niche opportunity sets there. but you really can't build business to scale. You really need a lifetime value construct and a path to maximizing wallet share. I'm a huge proponent of work from anywhere. Again, that's another thing I've shifted my view on. I used to think that people did that when they didn't really want to work. I'll give you a good example. Sophie does a phenomenal job cross-selling a product, and my experience is that the majority of their mortgage product is cross-sold to existing relationships. And again, that's a huge, huge competitive advantage when you look at what the cost is to get a mortgage to the door. 6. Finally, Cagney had thoughts about COVID and figures work culture going forward. He said he'd been pleasantly impressed with his team's productivity and purpose in the last few months. But this is a new road to travel for all of us. We've adopted permanent work from anywhere. We have offices, but no one has to go into the offices. I worry a little bit about how we are going to maintain that focus and consistency and adhesion into culture when we don't have the physical proximity anymore. And I don't know the answer to that one yet. I am a huge proponent of work from anywhere. Again, that's another thing I've shifted my view on. I used to think that people did that when they didn't really want to work. Now I've found myself more productive, I've found our team more productive. And I am a huge proponent of it. But I worry about the cultural aspect of how do you build that sense of belonging and adhesion to a common direction, common goal and common set of values if you're all remote. And it's not that I don't think we can do it, I just don't necessarily know what the playbook is, nor does anyone else, because it really hasn't been done before. China's blockchain infrastructure to extend global reach with 6 public chains. The takeaway: China's state-backed blockchain-based service network, BSN, has integrated with 6 public chains including Tezos, NEO, Nervus, EOS, IrisNet and Ethereum. Developers on these 6 blockchains will be able to build dApps and run nodes using data storage and bandwidth from BSN's overseas data centers starting August 10. This is part of China's plan to be the one and only infrastructure provider for blockchain firms around the world. Global users will have access to China's enterprise chains and financial data via the network's cross-chain structure and partnership with China UnionPay. A blockchain infrastructure backed by the Chinese government will open its services to decentralized applications, DApp, developers on a global scale on August 10. The move is part of China's plan to be the one and only infrastructure provider for blockchain firms across the world. That effort resembles the country's aggressive international expansion in other major emerging technologies such as 5G and artificial intelligence. This global expansion is notable, given that China's attempts to lead in other technologies have been disrupted. The Trump administration issued a new rule in May to prevent Chinese tech conglomerate Huawei, a leader in 5G technology, and its suppliers from using U.S. technology and software. The UK has also barred Huawei from its 5G networks. Yet China's global blockchain ambitions have been a smooth sail. The global version of blockchain-based services network, BSN, has integrated its data centers with 6 major decentralized blockchains: Tezos, NEO, Nervus, Cosmos IrisNet, Ethereum and EOS. The developers on these public chains can run nodes and applications using data storage, bandwidth and other resources provided by BSN. The public chains could benefit from BSN's cheap services, interoperability with other Chinese enterprise blockchains and access to financial data from China UnionPay, which is otherwise difficult for foreign-based blockchain firms to obtain and process. The move is a milestone as BSN is the first state-backed blockchain infrastructure that is reaching developer communities outside China by integrating with major public chains, said Yifan He, CEO of Beijing Red Date Technology, one of the founding companies behind BSN. The nationwide blockchain infrastructure project was launched in April. It is led by the State Information Center of China, SIC, and supported by state-owned tech conglomerates China Mobile and China UnionPay, and Red Date, which architects BSN's technical framework. SIC is a public institution under the National Development and Reform Commission, NDRC, the highest economic planning agency in the Chinese government. The institution has been one of the principal architects behind China's national information security policies, and monitors and processes macroeconomic data for policymakers. The six blockchain projects are BSN's first batch of decentralized public blockchains to run on the network across its three data centers in Paris, San Francisco, and Hong Kong, he said. "We've taken a lot of thoughts about who would be the first public chains to be integrated," he said. "Besides Ethereum and EOS we have disclosed in April, we decided to include another international public chain Tezos, and two prominent China-originated projects NEO and Nervous." BSN aims to onboard more than 10 public chains by the end of this year based on their user bases, technical background and products, he said. Cloud services for blockchain. Guaning L, co-founder of Nervous, said BSN can support a tailored infrastructure service for blockchain developers, noting that projects need to be able to run nodes on such an infrastructure to operate. Essentially, blockchain firms are using standardized internet services from BSN as opposed to adjusting their own technical frameworks to use such services, L said. The standardized development environment could save a lot of time and money for developers from building things from scratch, L said. For example, validation nodes require a high level of security protection to prevent them from distributed denial of service (DDoS) attacks, one of the most common cyber attacks that make a network unavailable to its users, Harriet Tsao, co-founder of IrisNet Foundation, said. BSN will hide the complexities of these security features in its operation support. In the future, a developer can use BSN to run a node like people use cloud services, and developers can just search the name of the blockchain and hold their private keys in order to build dApps or run a node, Tsao said. Developers will enjoy free services on BSN if they have fewer than 2,000 daily connection requests to BSN's nodes. Red Date Technologies Yifan He claims that BSN will be much more cost-effective and stable than other networks for dApp developers. There are free nodes for blockchain projects but they tend to be unstable and hard to trace once a dApp loses connections to the nodes. Many dApps buy services from Amazon Web Services, AWS, and build their own nodes in the data centers. For one single node on a network like Alibaba Cloud, developers would have to pay tens of thousands of dollars per year plus the cost of human resources in order to maintain the node. In contrast, BSN will only charge several hundred dollars for the yearly resources and operational services needed to run nodes, he said. APIs. While there are only six public chains, users will have more than a dozen options to be connected with BSN's nodes. All six chains will have nodes assigned to their mainnet and testnet respectively, where developers can first run their applications on testnets and find potential problems to ensure a frictionless experience on their mainnets. While all the chains will be able to be connected to the nodes via their native application programming interfaces, API, Ethereum and EOS developers can opt for API services provided by a third-party blockchain middleware firm Diffuse. For Ethereum and EOS, there will be mainnet nodes, testnet nodes and Diffuse nodes with their own special API infrastructure attached to the nodes. While Diffuse could offer faster and more convenient connections with the nodes on BSN, we make sure the developers with privacy concerns can still opt for native APIs, he said. Diffuse, founded in 2018, is a Montreal, Canada-based firm that started off by providing API services to EOS-based applications. It later branched out to projects on Ethereum. "One of the main reasons that BSN chose us is we are very scalable," Alexander Bourget, Diffuse co-founder and chief technology officer, said. Diffuse has been built and stress-tested on public chains processing 5,000 sustained 10,000 burst transactions per second, and is ready to support the next 10x and 100x in industry growth. The firm has been funded by Multicoin Capital and Intel Capital, which is the investing arm of Intel Corporation. One network, two systems. Developers can build dApps on the six public chains in BSN's global version. Domestic users in mainland China, however, only have access to enterprise blockchains due to Chinese government's restrictions on decentralized public chains that tend to have tokens. The Chinese government and regulators are very cautious about decentralized public chains and try not to get involved in anything related to a public blockchain, Hongfei Da, founder of NIO, said. It is interesting to see BSN, which has a clear commercial purpose and is backed by entities with government background, is supporting such projects. It is like ByteDance behind TikTok, Da said. The international version of the app does not necessarily comply with the Chinese regulation but the local regulations from the countries where it is used. BSN reflects a common pragmatic approach for Chinese companies to go global. BSN can serve as a way for non-Chinese blockchain firms to tap into the Chinese blockchain community. Developers outside China can now use many major Chinese enterprise blockchains to build their dApps, such as Tencent's consortium chain Fisco Bisco used for its virtual bank WeBank, according to He. We're thrilled for Tezos to join a cohort of public blockchains that will provide the base layer for companies and software developers building blockchain-based applications in China and globally, Hubertus Thonhauser, chairman of the Tezos Foundation Council, said. Participating in the BSN is a momentous step forward on the path to wide-scale institutional adoption for the Tezos project. This concludes our edition for today. We want to thank again Paycademy, the first business school to learn payments and fintech, for their support. You can find more information on their website at paycademy.com. We hope you enjoyed it and see you tomorrow for our next edition.